Mark gave a sermon about the story of this rich young ruler in Luke chapter 18. So let's flip there for a second. And in this story, right, this rich young guy comes to talk to Jesus, and he says, "What do I have to do to be saved?" And Jesus says, "You know the commandments." He says, "Oh yeah, I've kept all the commandments." And then Jesus makes this remark, towards the end of this story, this is Luke chapter 18, verse 22. When Jesus heard this, he said to him, "You still lack one thing. Sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me." Now, the one way we can talk about this passage is this sort of following Jesus thing. And that's a good story. I get that. Following Jesus, loving people, you know, that's the command. That's a good thing, too. And we think about those things. We think, that's all great. But this whole bit about sell everything you have and follow me. Let's be honest. Did he really mean sell everything you have? Is this loud? I mean, it sounds loud to me. It's okay, or it's loud. So sell everything you have. I mean, that seems to me to be a little bit over the top, right? And fortunately, you know, Mark's talking about this, and we're talking about following Jesus, and all of that part's good. But what am I supposed to do with this sell everything you have bit? And then we get sort of a nicer story. You know, Mark alluded to it too, in Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is also this guy, he's a tax gatherer, so on. And right at the end, right, you know, Zacchaeus stands up and says, so this is Luke chapter 19, verse 8. "But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, 'Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I cheat anybody, I'll make up,'" right? Half my possessions. And Jesus says, that's great. So, okay, half. I mean, let's be honest, that's better, right? I mean, you give half your possessions to the poor. It's a lot better than having to give all your possessions. And Zacchaeus is lauded for giving half his possessions. So we know half is an okay number, but half? I mean, really? Are we all supposed to give half right now? And then when you start thinking about it, you begin to realize half doesn't really do it either. Because once you've given half your possessions to the poor, now you have a whole set of possessions again. Do you have to give half again? And then once you've given that, do you have to do it again? And what if when I was 7 years old, I gave half my possessions to the poor? Am I good for the rest of my life? Am I okay now? I gave away half my Matchbox cars when I was 7 to a kid who had none, and I gave away half my baseball cards, and I'm all good now for the rest? Or do you have to do it when you're 20 or when you're 40? Or do you, like, every 5 years do you have to give away? I mean, what are we supposed to do with this? And you know what? When we start going down this, it becomes really great because you start saying, you know, this just doesn't make any sense. And we can just ignore the clear message here. Because what's the obvious message from this? We should all be taking a vow of poverty. I mean, it's obvious when you're reading these passages, right? We should be giving away all our possessions. Start with half if that's where you want to start. But half is a way stop to all. We should be taking these vows of poverty. We should keep a tunic and some sandals and roam the land sort of in this sort of utter poverty. You know, our role model here is St. Francis of Assisi. St. Francis of Assisi was a great guy because whenever he would see somebody needy, he'd give them something. He was really helpful to them. And people kept saying, you know, St. Francis, you're outside all the time, right? Wandering around talking to birds, right? Here's a cloak, right? So they give him a cloak, and then he'd meet somebody who didn't have a cloak, and he'd give him the cloak. And they say, no, St. Francis, now you don't have a cloak. Here's a cloak, right? And he'd meet somebody else and give it a cloak. Nobody could give the guy a cloak because he's constantly giving it away. And that's what we should be emulating in our Christian walk, giving away all of our possessions, because let's be honest, there's always somebody out there who could use something. And right about now, we are all getting profoundly uncomfortable because we do not like where this sermon is going at all. This is not what you signed up for this morning. It's not okay. This cannot be the point of it. But you know it's right because you know money is the root of all evil, right? We know that. We know money is all evil and it's all bad. And the astute of you among are not going to say, there it is. There's the thing. Because it wasn't money is the root of all evil. Abe read the passage earlier. The love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. Much nicer message for us, right? It's not money that's the problem. It's the love of money that's the problem. And you know what? This is a relief to me. Because quite honestly, right, I love my wife. I love my kids. I love the Raiders. But money, where does it compete with my wife and the Raiders? It hardly rates. So am I okay now? Because when I think about love and I think about the things I really care about and then I think about money, I like money, but I don't love money. So am I all good here? On top of that, we have all sorts of other great scripture passages. One we like talking about more. Luke chapter 19. Right after the Zacchaeus story, Jesus tells a parable. the parable has this guy, he's king, and he comes out and he's going to go on this trip, right? And he goes and he gives money to 10 different servants. And he goes off on his trip, and then he comes back. And when he comes back, right, so this is Luke 19, we'll pick up in verse 15. He made king, however, and he returned home. Then he sent for the servants to whom he had given the money in order to find out what they'd earned with it, what they gained with it. The first one came and said, "Sir, your mina has earned 10 more." "Well done, my good servant," his master replied, "because you've been trustworthy in a very small matter. Take charge of 10 cities." The second came and said, "Sir, your mina has earned 5 more." His master answered, "You take charge of 5 cities." Then another servant came and said, "Sir, here is your mina. I kept it laid away in a piece of cloth. I was afraid of you because you're a hard man. You take what you did not put in and reap what you did not sow." His master replied, "I will judge you by your own words, you wicked servant. You knew, did you, that I am a hard man, taking out what I did not put in and reaping what I did not sow? Why then didn't you put my money on deposit, so when I came back, I could have collected it with interest?" And he said to those standing by, "Take his mina away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas." "Sir," they replied, "he already has 10. He replied, "I tell you that everyone who has more will be given, but as for the one who has nothing, even what he has will be taken away." It's obvious what this means. If you have a little bit, get richer. And if you get richer and richer, and who's condemned in this story? The poor guy who's not doing anything. And what should we do when we meet the poor guy? Take away what the poor guy gives and give it to the rich guy, because the rich guy at least knows what to do with wealth. And you know what? It's not just this. That story of Joseph that Craig read earlier, right? As soon as it was done, my wife looks at me and says, "That has something to do with the sermon," because it was really a random seeming passage coming out of nowhere, right? But think about what's happening in that story of Joseph. Here's Joseph, right? He's in Egypt. He gets this message, right? This dream from Pharaoh, and Joseph interprets it. 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. Joseph is put in charge of managing things, and what does he do? During the 7 years of plenty, he amasses a bunch of stuff, the famine hits, and then what does he do? He starts selling it off to everybody in Egypt, and what does he get for it? By the end of the story, he owns all of Egypt, right? This is insider trading, right? Martha Stewart went to jail, literally, for doing exactly what Joseph is doing in this story. And we read this story and say, what a great guy Joseph is. Because here, look at what he's done. He's made Pharaoh so rich. And we think about this, and we think, oh, yeah, getting rich is then the goal, right? Because you know, once you become rich, then what happens? Well, Andrew Carnegie told us, he has this great little essay. Andrew Carnegie, one of the wealthiest people ever, right? Has this great essay called The Gospel of Wealth. Think about the title, The Gospel of Wealth. And what he argues in it is, we need wealthy people. And why do we need wealthy people? Because who's going to give money to poor people if we don't have wealthy people? If you want to help out poor people, you want to build libraries for poor people can't build libraries because they have no money. But rich people can build libraries all over the land so poor people can go in and read all these books and get all of the culture and knowledge that's beneficial. We need, who's going to give money to missionaries? Who's going to come up with $1 million to build that orphanage Bill talked about, right? It's not poor people who are going to come up with $1 million. We need rich people to support missions. And you know what? Rich is the goal here. We should all be becoming fabulously wealthy so that we can all go do lots of good in this world. And you know what's great at this moment? We've got like dueling sermons here. In fact, what we really want to do is we should set up dueling churches, right? Put them on strap recordings. And we have like the Vow of Poverty Church. And you go to the Vow of Poverty Church and it's all about being poor, right? That's our goal. We should all be poor. And then across the street, you know, you have the Health and Wealth Church, right? It's, well, you should be rich, right? It's all about being rich. You know, it'll be a great church. And you can pick which church you want to go to because, hey, we're Americans. We do these things, right? So would you rather go to the Vow of Poverty Church or the rich church, right? And you're all sort of thinking, I don't want to pick either one. But imagine you had to pick. Which one would you pick? It's kind of an interesting question, right? Because quite honestly, probably you're feeling a little guilty saying, I want to go to the rich church, but going to the Vow of Poverty Church, you're going to feel guilty every single week. And so which one do you end up picking kind of thing? Marvin Francine, it was the pastor at the church in San Jose that I went to high school in, and the Gilmans went to. He used to have this great saying. He said, look, if you want to have a wealthy church, what all you need to do to have a wealthy church, a church that gets lots and lots of money every Sunday, is the pastor needs to have a giant diamond ring. And if the pastor has a giant diamond ring and he's preaching and he puts his hand on the pulpit so everybody can see the giant diamond ring, then your church will have lots of money. Why? Because then rich people will come and they'll say, hell, the pastor has a diamond ring. It's okay to be rich at this church, right? And then they'll come to the church, and then rich people giving a small percentage of their income give a lot more money to the church than poor people giving a large percentage of their income. And so you imagine these dueling churches, And then we say, well, we'll turn to Scripture to sort it out. But you'll note, we were reading Scripture passages in both of these. We read the give everything to the poor, sell all your possessions, right out of Scripture. And we read the you're condemned if you're not taking your mina and turning it into 10 minas. We read that too. All coming out. And you'll note, they're like on the same pages, right, in this Bible, right? So what do we do with this? And whenever you're faced with a giant puzzle like this, the best thing you can do is change the subject a bit, right? What we really want to do is this. We want Christian harmony, right? We don't like this idea of these dueling churches. Maybe we can find something that both churches can agree on. Maybe we can find some story that the Vow of Poverty Church and the super rich church can agree. Okay, this is what we should be thinking about. And fortunately, Jesus tells a parable like that shortly before this. Luke chapter 16. Verse 1, Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer. The manager said to himself, what shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm too ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, how much do you owe my master? 800 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, take your bill, sit down quickly, make it 400. Then he asked the second, and how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill and make it 800. Now what's great about this story is think about this manager. We can all agree this is a slimy, disgusting individual doing slimy, disgusting things. Here he is, right? He's this manager of this guy's estate. He's squandering him. He's just doing terrible things. He gets fired. And as soon as he gets fired, what does he do? He calls in his master's debtors, people who owe his master, who's just fired him, calls him in. They don't know he's been fired yet. And he comes in and he says, you know what? I know you owe my master 100. I'll tell you what, change the bill and only make it 50. And it's like the great revenge story ever, right? You're going to fire me. I'll show you, right? And he calls in and he shrinks down all the debts, debt by debt by debt by debt. Now, we think about a guy like that, and we say, how wrong of this guy. I mean, this is awful what this guy is doing. He's cheating his master for no apparent reason. I mean, just sort of here he is cheating his master. Master's not gaining anything by it, right? We look at this, and we could say, the Vow of Poverty Church should condemn this guy in no uncertain terms because he's sort of a fraud and a cheat, and he's slimy and disgusting. Our rich church should condemn this guy because he's a fraud and a cheat, and he's slimy and disgusting. And so we have here the perfect story that we can unite everyone around about how horrible this guy is. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had asked him shrewdly. The master commends the guy. Now, okay, now we get it. The master's also a little bit twisted in this story too, right? I mean, let's be honest. The guy just defrauded him of a whole bunch of wealth, right? And here he is commending the guy, right? So clearly we not only have a bad manager, we have a bad master. And so the real point is here, all these people are sort of just evil, nasty people doing evil, nasty things, and that doesn't surprise us at all. But then Jesus comes along, and he starts amplifying the message. For the people of this world are more shrewd in their dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth or unrighteous wealth to gain friends for yourself so that when it is gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Jesus seems to be commending this manager too. He's saying, you know, he's walking into church, he's saying, you know what? There's all those slimy people out there doing all those things, right? They're way better than all you lousy Christians who are not being very shrewd, let's be honest. And you know what you really ought to be doing? You ought to be out there acting like that shrewd manager out there. And we say, are you kidding me? And then this whole bit about, you know, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, right? Use your money to buy friends is what Jesus is saying. That's not an inference. That's what he's saying. Now, it's too late for many of you, right? All you older kids, right? But we need to start young. Look at Abby, right? Let's imagine we start Abby right now. We'll start on a training program. We'll say, Abby, you want some friends? Here's $5. Go buy yourself 5 friends. Friends are cheap when you're that age, right? And she was just sort of teach her that the way you get friends is you use your wealth to buy your friend network, right? And you get more and more and more friends as you keep buying them and buying them and buying them. And that's the words straight out of Jesus' mouth, right? Use your unrighteous wealth to gain friends, he says. Whoever can be trusted with very little can be trusted with much.
And whoever is dishonest with little will also be dishonest with much. Oh, that part's good. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? Is that the goal, is to get property of your own? I mean, again, right, we got this whole thing with all this unworldly wealth and it's unrighteous or so on, and you know what you ought to be doing? You ought to be trying to get wealth of your own, but why? So you can go out and act like the shrewd manager, and it's not hard to imagine what would happen if you're hearing Jesus give this parable. We know exactly what would happen because the Pharisees are standing by. Verse 14, the Pharisees who loved money heard all this and were sneering at Jesus or ridiculing Jesus in other translations. And it's not hard to see why. This story makes no sense. I mean, this is just crazy talk by Jesus, right? Here we got this evil guy that we all know, he's a villain, and suddenly Jesus is praising him. And then are we supposed to be getting wealth? But you get wealth so you can what, and you do what, and you know, what you do it unright, and then I want wealth or I don't want wealth. And the whole thing just makes no sense. And you can imagine they're all just sitting there saying, the guy has finally lost it, right? You imagine sort of I came in one day for a sermon, right? And I said, you know what we're going to talk about today? We're going to talk about the Godfather. And the Godfather is the key to the Christian life, right? And we'll all watch the movie, and that's how we should all live. And you'd all know right then. I mean, he's always been pushing the edge, but this is just a step too far, right? That's kind of the equivalent here of like, what is going on here? How are we supposed to make sense of this? So we're now left with a problem. We either go with the Pharisees, this guy's just a lunatic, or we have to hope, well, it's all hope, there's some rational explanation for this that will help solve our mystery. The rational explanation, if there is one, comes right away in verse 1. This is where the NIV lets us down a bit. It says, Jesus told his disciples. It should be more, Jesus also told his disciples, or Jesus then told his disciples. There's sort of a continuity in the beginning of this. And it's a continuity from what? This whole story of this shrewd manager is following right after another parable. So you imagine Jesus tells this parable, and then the story's saying, and then immediately he tells this other parable. What's the parable that comes right before it? It's a very familiar parable. It's the story of the prodigal son. Chapter 15, verse 11. Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. And immediately, we have a connection between this parable and our parable of the shrewd manager. What was the shrewd manager accused of when the master fired him? Now, we tend to think, you're going to fire the guy. He must be cheating the master because he was cheating the master later on. But if you look at it in verse 16, he's not fired for cheating the master at all. He was accused of wasting the master's possessions. That's what the shrewd manager is accused of. He's accused of just squandering the possessions. And so the master comes along and fires the manager. Now this story is coming right after the story of the prodigal son, where we have the son who goes off and wastes all of the possessions. And it's not hard to imagine, hey, maybe these two parables are connected somehow. And so what happens in the prodigal son story? He goes out and wastes all the possessions. He now has nothing. Famine hits. He says, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? I have no possessions. Shock of all shocks. You waste all your income. You have no possessions left. So he says, well, I'll go out and feed pigs. He's feeding pigs. It's miserable. It's dirty. And he says, you know what? I'm going to go back home to dad. He goes back home to dad. Dad welcomes him with open arms. Says, hey, it's great you're back. Kills the fattened calf for the son. And we have a happy story. Meanwhile, the older brother who'd stayed home gets really annoyed about all of this. And why is the older brother annoyed? The older brother is annoyed because what has the father just done? Father's just taken this great cow, sacrificed it to feed the kid who's wasted all the possessions. What a waste! I mean, you have a guy who's wasted all of his possessions, and what do? You go waste all of your more possessions, giving this guy even more stuff. And the older brother is indignant. Dad, don't you notice? He just wasted everything. And what are you doing? You're wasting stuff too. Why are you giving more stuff to this kid who's a no good, no account whatsoever? And the father looks at him and says, it's all good. He's back. I'm all happy here. Then Jesus goes on to tell another story. And what's the other story? Well, the other story has this really interesting parallel, suddenly you realize. We have a manager. He's wasting all of his master's possessions. Master comes along, fires him. Suddenly the guy has no income and no job. And what does he say? He says, you know what? I can't go out and feed pigs, right? I'm too weak to go work for a living. I'm too proud to beg for money.
So if he'd heard the prodigal son story, he knows that's the option. So he'd heard the prodigal son story, and he says, well, this is what I ought to do. I ought to go back to my master. Except the master is the guy who just fired him in this story. He can't go back to the master. So now what do? You're this manager. You've been fired for wasting possessions. You have no option of returning back and just say, ah, I've sinned. I'm sorry, right? Because the guy just fired you, right? You don't want to go feed pigs. You can't work. I mean, let's be honest. It's unpleasant working on days like this, right? You don't want to do that. You're too proud to beg. So what do? The guy is really clever. He gets called shrewd for a reason. He's really clever. He says to himself, you know what? I have nothing. But you know what I still have? I still have access to all my master's stuff. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to start giving away some of my master's possessions. He gives them away. You'll notice he's not buying anything with them. He's just giving them away. Guy comes in, you owe me 100, now you only owe 50. You only owe 80. And he just gives it away. And why is he giving away all these possessions? I mean, this is just wasting it. He's not wasting it. This is what he said, right? He says, I know what I'll do when I lose my job here. People will welcome me into their homes. He's going to give out all of these gifts right now so that when he's out of a job and they all know, oh my goodness, the guy lost his job and he has no place to live, he can go knock on the door and say, I got no place to live. There'll be all these people that just got this great gift last week, and they'll say, ah, come on into the house. And he'll have some place to stay. And then you think, why is the master commending this guy? Because that was smart. I mean, it was really smart. You're taking a guy who's been wasting all of your possessions, just wasting them. You're already losing. And finally, instead of just losing them through wasting, he's being really clever in the way he's giving them out, right? He's giving them out in this really clever way, saying, you know what, I'll give you these gifts now, and maybe down the line, something else will come to me. And Jesus looks out and says, you know what? That guy's shrewder than all of you. Because what are all of you doing? You've got all of these possessions, and what are you doing with them? All sorts of things, let's be honest. But you know what the shrewd guy did? He realized you give him away his gifts. Yeah, I give this gift, you give this gift, you give this gift. And you know what? Later on, there'll be gifts coming back. Eternal gifts, perhaps, coming back. And then you begin to put the story together and you begin to realize that's what Jesus is saying in all of this. It's not the wasting of the possessions if what you're doing is giving them away to other people with no strings attached. You're just giving the gift. The father gives the fattened calf to the son, right? The shrewd servant just sort of gives out the gifts. And Jesus is saying it all comes back somehow in some great cosmic thing. There's this return. And the Pharisees come along and start ridiculing Jesus. Why? Well, the Pharisees who loved money heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. And what's the problem? Well, the story is they loved money. And you begin to think, yeah, okay, I get it. The rich Pharisees all sneering at Jesus and this whole story about giving the stuff away. And Jesus comes back and he condemns the Pharisees, but again, not in the way we would expect. What would we expect Jesus to be saying here? Hey, this whole point, you're missing the point. You have a lot of money, you should be giving it away too. But that's not what Jesus says. He said to them, you are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of men, but God knows what's in your hearts. You justify yourselves in the eyes of men, but God knows what's in your heart. And Jesus has nailed it. People are always asking, you know, there's all these parables about wealth and so on in the Bible. Jesus is constantly talking about money. People are always like, what am I supposed to do with all this? Our big debate, you know, vow of poverty, you're supposed to be wealthy. I think it's safe to say this verse may be the key to all of them. Because you think about what we do, right? We like to say we don't love money, but we are all thinking about money all the time. How could we not be thinking about money all the time? We think about wealth. We like wealth. We also get, you know, maybe we're supposed to help those in need. We get all of this. And we are constantly asking ourselves, am I giving enough away? Am I keeping enough? Am I doing the right thing? And why? Well, think about our two churches, right? The rich church is sitting around saying, look, you should be acquiring the wealth. Wealth is the sign you're doing the right thing here, right? God's rewarding you for doing the right thing. And then you're looking around the congregation and you're constantly thinking, hey, I got a lot of wealth. And there's all these other people with a lot of wealth. Oh, there's those people over there. They're obviously not working that hard, right? Look at me. Look how good I'm doing, right? And how do I know I'm wealthy? Because look, I look around, I see a bunch of slightly poor people. So I must be doing it. But then you think about our Vow of Poverty Church, and what happens at the Vow of Poverty Church? You drive into the parking lot, you want to make sure you have the worst car in the parking lot. Let's be honest, right? You don't want the best car, right? As long as I've got the worst car,
clearly my poverty vow is trumping all those up. And you know what? I don't actually have the worst car. As long as I'm in the bottom half of cars, right? And let's be honest. As long as there's at least two or three, maybe just one car nicer than mine, right? Every church needs the guy who has the Mercedes so we can all feel good, right? At least I don't have a Mercedes, right? Look at this. And you realize all the time we're constantly doing this. Am I giving enough away? Who are we asking when we ask that question? We're looking around the room and asking each other, am I giving enough away, right? Is it okay if I give this or don't give this? How am I doing relative to others? How much of my income have I given away compared to these other people? How much of my income have I kept compared to these other people? Am I earning enough? Am I not earning enough? And Jesus looks out and says, who do you think you're kidding, right? I don't care how much wealth you have. God knows what's in your heart. What's in your heart? And we constantly avoid that question all the time. We want to know, have I given enough? Because we have this idea, if I give enough, then I've hit my magic checklist and everybody will be happy with me. God knows what's in your heart. Imagine you've given away 90% of your wealth. Is that enough? I don't know. God knows what's in your heart. Imagine you've given away 1% of your wealth. Is that enough? I don't know. God knows what's in your heart. Jesus completely flipped this on the Pharisees, saying, of course there are all these different mixed messages about giving away your wealth. The only reason they seem mixed to you is because you are all looking for an answer. You want me to tell you 25%, 25% over this amount. Maybe we'll make it like a tiered progressive tax code, right? If you're poor, you give 5%. As you get richer, you go up to 15. As you get really rich, you give away 50, right? Maybe that would be it. We all would love that, because then we can have our check. Let's see, I'm poor enough, or I'm rich enough, or maybe this is what my income should be. And Jesus is saying, you know what? Forget all of that. Forget asking. Don't talk to anybody about it. Talk to God about it. The hardest thing about talking to God about it, though, is being honest with yourself. Because being honest with ourselves is where we get really hung up. We're not honest with ourselves because in giving away our wealth, we are constantly doing one of two things. We are giving it away thinking we're fulfilling some sort of checklist. I was supposed to give some away. I gave some away. I'm all good now. Look, I gave some away, right? And what was the goal there? The goal was to fit this checklist. Or, all right, I've got this magic number in mind, and when I give this much away, look how much I'm giving away. The Andrew Carnegie thing, Gospel of Wealth. Look, I've given away 90% of my possessions, and look at all the libraries I've built. And Jesus looked at those guys who were giving away all their income in the treasury, and he says, you know what, it's all ostentatious show. He doesn't care if you're giving away 90% of your income, if you're just doing it for the show of giving it all the libraries. He doesn't care if you're just giving in the two pennies, right? He cares what's in your heart. There's no answer here. I know you all want one because I want one. Let's be honest. We all want one. We all want an easy answer where we can go home, say, I've given this much, and now I don't have to think about it anymore. And Jesus is calling us to something much harder. Spend the rest of your life wrestling with God Himself. He knows what's in your heart. We need to figure out what's in our own heart. If you see someone in need and you feel the need to give to them, give to them. That's the obvious lesson. Now, are you seeing people in need and feeling the need or not? I don't know, and far be it from me to start judging you, because that's our other temptation we fall into all the time. We look around the room, and we look at everyone else, and we say, what about them? Are they giving enough? Are they giving too much? Should they be acquiring more? Why do we care what anyone else in this room is doing? Why do we spend any time at all even thinking about it? It's enough trouble to think about ourselves and make our hearts right with God. Let's pray.